Thank you. My name's Elizabeth Nyamwange. I'm 17 years old. I'm a student. And I live in the United States, but a few years ago, I went to Kenya with my family, my parents, my sister. And in Kenya, they use a type of digital transaction that's called M-Pesa, which means you're sending and receiving money associated with the phone number, and it's all through your phone. And I remember when we were in Kenya, we were at the city market in this shop, and there was this woman that was selling very beautiful jewelry. And we tried to buy it from her. We asked her what her M-Pesa number was. She said she had none. And this kept happening. People would go up to her and ask her, what's your M-Pesa number? And she'd say, I don't have any. And when we asked her why, she said, it's because I don't have an ID. And because she had no M-Pesa number, that meant that she needed someone else to receive the money for her, give it to her, and she had to pay some type of fee for that, which means there was a third party that was involved in everything she was selling and everything she was doing. And that's how I was introduced to the digital identification crisis. And it's more so than just women who don't have bank accounts, but it's women who can't vote, women who can't work in the formal sector, women who sometimes carry all the jewelry they have and around their necks in the form of money in case they ever need anything because they have no formal way to send, receive, and exchange money. And identity credentials aren't only practical and tangible gateways for women to access services, but it also makes them feel valued in their economies and their societies. And additionally, men rather than women often have all these identity credentials, which means that a lot of times women are legally dependent on a man to get an ID. I talked with an orphan who just had no ID, and she needed two men to verify her identification, which they weren't willing to do. That would grant her the family land that they didn't want her to have. I also talked with Somali refugees who were located in Kenya. They were displaced, have absolutely no identity. They couldn't open bank accounts. They couldn't travel. They were ultimately stuck. And this was an example of what I had already known. Women have been entrepreneurs. They've been business people, they've been leaders, but a lot of times they can't access what it means to be a participant of their society because they aren't recognized as one. And so when I had gotten home, I started researching a little bit more about M-Pesa and digital identification, biometrics, and what exactly that meant. I knew a little bit of programming, and I decided to teach myself a little bit more in hopes of creating an app. And what this app would do was verify digital identification. So in cases like this, when people wanted to use M-Pesa, there's another way that they could do it. And I'd spent a lot of time working on this app, learning the programs that I needed to learn. And by the time that I had created it, I realized that it wouldn't work. And the reason that it wouldn't work is because in these countries and in these areas, the woman who needed identification often didn't have phones. And the rate in which the men had phones in comparison to the woman was a lot higher. It wasn't even. I was creating an app, but it wasn't going to be accessible for the people who needed it most. So I needed to basically bring technology backwards and find something that would work without electricity or internet. And I spent a lot of time then working on that. I'd taken a 2G phone and decided to deconstruct it and see if there's any technology inside of that that would work. And I had never told anyone the idea simply because it didn't really sound reasonable and it didn't sound possible. And at the time, I was 14 years old. I had no idea if I could, one, create a device from scratch, and two, create something that could work without electricity or internet. But I attribute my age to the reason I started working on it to begin with. Because I had no idea of what could work, what couldn't work. I had just wanted to try. And so I spent the next 2 years developing something that has become Etana, which is a device that can create digital identification without using electricity or internet. It uses the original software that I created for an app to convert any biometric information into binary. And kind of similarly to a 2G phone, it uploads it to this public blockchain, which this decentralized server that no one can alter, no one can mess, no one can touch with. And with this, women in areas where there's no electricity or no internet can then create a type of digital identification that would allow them, in this case, to open bank accounts and hopefully eventually vote, work in the formal sector, things like that. So when I'm asked the question, how can technology and access to technology for youth change the world, I say that I've seen myself how other children and the kids who've helped me can be very, very fearless creators. They don't have a voice in their head telling them to be practical, but instead a mind that tells them that anything is possible. And they all develop responsively and inherently put people before projects. And I believe that by teaching young women to program, such as how I learned, I had the privilege to go on my computer and just kind of research it myself, you're providing them with the roots to create anything in this entirely digital world and solve the world's hardest problems that perhaps business people and corporations can't solve, no matter how much money you put into it. The women and girls who are displaced by climate change, they can explain its impacts and they can solve problems perhaps better than anyone else, but they still remain excluded from a lot of the conversations. And the women I said before, the ones that carried their life savings in the form of jewelry around their necks and their wrists, they can explain economic disadvantage more so than anyone else, and still they aren't included in those conversations. And I believe that the technology that we're developing is going to take decades and decades to reach the people that need it most, so we need to go backwards a little bit. And I think that young minds and kids are the people that can do that. So when people innovate responsibly, they understand that everything doesn't impact people the same exact way, and I believe kids inherently have that trait. Ultimately, I think that young minds have the ability to problem solve in brand new ways, especially young girls, people who are displaced, and women who have experienced poverty or different types of inequality at the hands of others. And I believe that they're begging for us to invest in their minds and let for them to do the rest. Thank you.